Well, hey there, everybody. I'm Andrew Shaver, and it's time for When We Wake. On today's show, I've got a wake-up call with the Duke of Dartmouth, the newly anointed 50-year-old, Joel Plaskett. Joel turned 50 on April 18th, a momentous occasion that was worthy of a momentous gift. His manager, longtime manager Sherry Jones, put together a surprise tribute album. I played songs from it last week. I'll play a couple songs from it this week. We chat about the album. That chat is coming up in about 15 minutes. But first, we're going to kick the show off with some music. Montreal's Bells Larson recently had to cancel his U.S. tour coinciding with the release of his sophomore album, Blurring Time. Bells had to cancel that tour because, well, he's trans. His passport shows an M, and he was assigned an F at birth. And, well, now, as a result of the Trump administration's anti-trans policies, he can't enter the U.S. Absolutely crushing news. Let's kick the show off with something from Bells Larson. The track is called 514 to 415. That's Montreal to San Francisco, which is, well, a city that was on the tour that Bells can no longer go play. It's Bells Larson kicking off When We Wake.
514 to 415, you're the right person, wrong time. Now and then, I still like to play pretend. Do you think that it is strange, the weather of your city saved on my phone, trying not to feel forlorn? Ships passing.
That's new from Bells Larson, 514 to 415. It's on his forthcoming sophomore album, Blurring Time. The album is due April 25th. Now, when Bells had to cancel his U.S. tour, he put a call out on Instagram to other Canadian musicians saying, if you're looking for a support act on any of your tours this summer or the fall, hit me up. And wouldn't you know that Dan Mangan did just that. Dan is in the process of releasing a new album and in the fall will be touring in support of it and has invited Bells on those dates. What a guy. The new album is called Natural Light, and it arrives May 16th. I got the chance to chat with Dan all about the new album and other things, and I'll be packaging that chat to coincide with the album's release. So in the meantime, what do you say we hear the first single from Dan Mangan's forthcoming album, Natural Light? The tune is called Melody.
Melody chose me, and Melody changed her mind. I should be over it now, but I ain't over it now, that's why I'd rather be lonely than be somebody's wasted time. I should be over it now, but I ain't over it now. They always gotta go when you want them to stay, so it's better not to love them.
New from Dan Mangan, Melody, from his forthcoming album Natural Light, an album that he recorded over 6 days in a cabin in the woods with three of his best buds, including this guy, Mike O'Brien. Mike puts out music as Miko Brain. Last year he put out an album called Wonderment. I love it. From it, this is Warm Wind on When We Wake.
Here comes another flash of light, quick as cold, as fast as night. Here comes another holy roll, coming through the radio. I wish I could be a bridge to help you through the pain you're. Get through this, I'm gonna gentle hand like a warm wind. Here comes the hardest part of all. No final call. And even when the mind is gone, the body somehow carries on and on and on and on and on and on. I wish I could be a bridge to help you through the pain you're in. I know that to get through this, I'm gonna need a gentle hand like a warm wind. Warm.
Somebody introduce me to a member of the club. I think that they confused me with some other rub-a-dub-a-dub. Now I work on the fifth floor and nothing is my fault. I take advice like margaritas with a heavy grain of salt. Always wake up at night wondering if I'm doing it right. And if I had my way, I'd be getting all these flies tonight. In the morning, I'd be lying on a beach in the sun, lying to my family and friends, telling them that I have begun, trying to find the means to an end. Lying on a beach in the sun, lying just to cover my eyes, lying in the sun on the beach, burning like the girls in the grass. I should be working on my manners, but I'm working on my website. All you star spangled scanners trying to photocopy moonlight, staring at the computer screen, feeling so alone and obscene, getting restless, getting randy, getting mean. Lying on a beach in the sun, looking for a little romance. Temperature's 101. Everybody take off your pants. Lying on the beach in the sun, trying to figure out what to do. Lying in the sun on the beach, I realized I did not have. I'm bored, it's only 20 past three. Should go for a swim. I'll still be clinging to the company line. The sharks out there, I think I saw a fin. Or maybe I'm just losing my mind. come on home. We're all on automatic. When I get it back together, we're gonna need a little static. Somebody check my pulse, slap me in the face, show me what I need of, get me out of this place. It's like a weird technological dream, watching Buddy turn into machines. We never get a hand steady, but paradise is never this clean. Come on. Lying on a beach in the sun, don't wanna get burned to a crisp. You want something to remember me by. You can save it on a floppy disk. So long, farewell. You can't kiss my ass goodbye. If I don't jump ship right now, I'll never figure out how to fly.
Produced by her hubby, Daniel Ledwell. That is Jen Grant doing Joel Plaskett's Lying on a Beach from Joel's 2005 La-Di-Da album. And folks, it's time for the wake-up call. And on today's wake-up call, I get to chat with the aforementioned Joel Plaskett. Joel just turned 50 April 18th, and as you'll hear in our chat, he was kind of hoping for a quiet birthday this year, and, you know, he got anything but. Thanks in part to his longtime manager and friend, Sherry Jones, who spent the better part of the last year and a half putting together an incredible tribute album as a surprise for Joel on his 50th, an album that includes Jen Grant's Lying on a Beach. It also includes the likes of Arkells, The Sheepdogs, Sloan, Rose Cousins, City and Color, David Miles, Matt and Jill Barber. Truly, it's a remarkable album celebrating a remarkable songwriter and all-around terrific guy. I got to chat with Joel in the days leading up to his big birthday on the 18th, and it's my pleasure to play it for you now. Here's my wake-up call with Joel Plaskett. Joel.
Andrew.
Look at that hair. You got a great head of hair. Are you kidding me?
Bedhead.
It's early in British Columbia, huh?
It's not that early. It's within the realm of reasonable. It's just not.
Well, you know, us old men, you know, we get up early these days, don't we?
Yeah, exactly. I'm doing pretty well. Yeah, I'm great. Yeah.
What a heck of a week you've had.
Yeah, beautiful. It's been great.
No kidding, man.
Yeah. It's been like my joke is I should turn 50 more often.
Yeah. Or we should just, you know, love you as much when it's 51, 52.
Well, I'm actually not 50. The birthday surprise came a week early, so I've been getting birthday wishes all week. Still haven't hit the actual day yet.
Right. My God. What does Sherry have planned for? It's April 18th. Yeah. Your actual birthday. What is going to happen?
Yeah. No, I'm hoping I'm out of the clear at this point. It's funny. I was really honestly thinking a lot of people were saying, what are you going to do for your 50th? I was like, I want it to be mellow, you know? And here it is, public.
It has been anything but a quiet, mellow birthday.
Full on press campaign behind a covers record. It's amazing.
You must be so overwhelmed by this outpouring of love and affection.
I am, yeah. I mean, I kind of choke, you know, I've been tearing up, you know, quite a bit when I get into conversation or I was listening to the music, you know, had a good headphone listen to the whole record.
Yeah.
The record's a blast to listen to. I get such a kick out of it, you know, really moving performances on it too, and it's just loads of fun and really meaningful, and you know, just as far as a gift that all these folks were in on, I'm really floored. I mean, it's a lot of work and time and, you know, love that everybody sent me, so yeah, I'm full up.
Yeah, it's rather incredible the coup that your longtime manager and pal Sherry Jones pulled off here. I mean, I have a handful of buds on this album. I had no idea. Two of whom are like very close friends, like the Barbers. I had no idea that they were doing this. You know, it was locked tight.
Sworn to a code of silence. Yeah. It was funny. I sent an email to Dave at Precision Pressing, who did the vinyl, and just said, "Look, I know you guys did this too. Like, thanks. There's been a lot of people involved in the background of the thing, from Matt Dunn, who did
Right.
the artwork, who's laid out a lot of my artwork, everybody." And I sent a note to Dave, and he said, he said, "Oh, it's no big deal. Just had to make sure we are delivered the record on time, and that everyone involved with it here at the pressing plant was sworn to a vow of silence, like threatening them with threatening violence or something." He said, like a joke, but. Kind of like everyone on the walk down at the record plant too,
Never has there been an NDA involved in your, Joel Plaska's music, eh?
Yeah, I don't think so. So, but yeah, really, really funny. Just very kind of like, no, it's really, I mean, I've my brain's been elsewhere too. I've been working on other things and this and that thing. And so, I'm sure he was like, I'll come out. I'm going to be out in Victoria. Let's go for dinner. And then the night before, Becky was like, "Why is Sherry
Do I need a
here?" And
new
I was like,
manager?
"I think she's just visiting some people, but we're gonna have dinner, And then she's like, "We'll meet at the record store." Then that night before, I was like, "Why is Sherry here? Like, is she breaking up with me?"
Very much the opposite.
So I woke up in the middle of the night kind of wondering that.
Oh.
And then the next day, we'll meet at the record store. But I sort of was like, "Yeah, sure." And I walk into the record store and there's this poster on the wall. I'm like, "Oh, she's doing like promo for me while I'm here. This is kind of awkward." And I'm like, "What is this poster?" And then it doesn't click to me that Sherry would never make a poster without asking me, really. Like, normally I would. And so, because I'm pretty hands-on in terms of whatever the public face of what I do is. But I look at the poster and I'm like, "What is this?" And I see the vinyl beside it. I mean,
Like it looks familiar.
if you saw the social media bit, it's they captured that in there on it, but the video. But my God, it was a real surprise.
No kidding,
Yeah.
man. No kidding. Now you said, you've had other things on your mind as well. I mean, I watched Character Witness, the companion piece, as you've said, to your most recent album, One Real Reveal, and it's really great, man.
Hey.
That just came out. Was that something that was on your mind? Is that what you're talking about?
Like, I worked a bunch of February and March on that, and then there was the ramp up for it to come out here, and all of it. So yeah, that was where my brain was at through the winter, was working on that. It was quite a project, actually, to make 22 minutes of video. I realized is like a lot of time.
It
Yeah, I
is a
mean,
lot of time.
you work in that universe, and I made music videos and this and that here and there, and they take some time, but to stitch something together that holds across 22 minutes gave me a kind of new respect for t people who make TV or do
Oh, yeah.
storytelling, real form, and all of it. Because I w a few, there was a few points during the process of that where I was like, "I don't know if I like this." Like, I kind of can it, but I'm pleased with where it landed. I mean, it's also weird. It's because it's not really a documentary, but it has the feel of a doc. It's you're not really supposed to make it. I mean, I wasn't directing it per se. I kind of call it sort of no director. We were all working on it, but I was sort of producing it. You kind of really can't do that if you're the subject. So I was like, I'm d kind of determined to make this more just like a weird follow my nose art piece, that I'm in and I'm talking and doing this and that. But it sort of was like, it was hard to find it took a while to find the tone of it. By the end of it was fun. It was very kind of frustrating in the middle. Because it was the I was like, "Oh, the beginning and the end of this is great." Everything else in the middle was like, the bulk of it, the body of it, made no sense whatsoever. Until it's a weird thing how when you're doing like anything, same goes with songs to some degree, but when you're doing it with visual, it's that much there's that many more layers, because you've got audio and visual that you're playing with. And sometimes, like, a fade versus a cut changes the entire way you feel about something. And so the emotion of something is so, there's several things that you can do to affect the sensory experience for the if you're watching it, listening to it, all of it. And there's similar things in like in art, in visual arts and or songwriting or recording. But video is like got all of it going on, and there's like things that you can do. And also, just like, literally, if you cut away before you go, before you breathe a little bit or something, you're like, "Oh, that feels good." Or, "No, I need a breath there." And it becomes just sort of like an intuition, but you have to develop it, and you don't know why something's working. And then somebody goes, "What about this?" And they literally, move the cursor, in the edit, a beat earlier. And you're like, "Yeah, that feels right."
And cut the breath.
Exactly. So it's a strange, because it makes all the difference between something feeling, forced or natural.
Did I conjure you with the keys and the ribbon as a character witness to my ups and my downs? Was that you checking in with the cats in the kitchen, watching starlings from the window while you were making the rounds?
I think it's really beautiful, man. Like, it is, for folks who are listening who haven't seen it, I encourage you to watch it. But and you can on, I think it's on CBC Gem.
Yeah, and on YouTube as well.
And YouTube, right. It contains interview footage, you know, kind of real-time interview footage of you talking about your music, about your life, memories from your life. It also contains some concert footage from, I think, the One Real Reveal tour. Yeah. And that on this tour, you were in a red swivel chair and you were flanked by two window panes.
Yep.
And they were used as screens that you projected images and videos onto from your phone in real time during the concert. It's really, truly, it was really beautiful. Like, it was intimate. It was sort of unadorned in that way. And it's very funny, sincere and very funny. The whole thing works for me.
Okay.
What I particularly loved is that it culminates, like you were saying earlier, that, you know, you had the beginning and the end, you didn't have the middle.
Yeah.
But the end is really, truly terrific, because One Real Reveal was recorded on a cassette 4-track.
Yeah.
And so now the character witness, the film, it culminates in essentially the video equivalent of the 4-track audio recording, which I just think is a stroke of genius, and it was very well executed too. So congratulations on that. Talk to me about that.
Thank you. Yeah, that was actually the first thing we shot, right? Where
wow.
I said, like, I was kind of trying to figure out, how do you capture 4-track recording, first of all? And what would be an interesting way to sort of, like, I've been really, 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 I've been kind of, the last while, tonight is the last of this sort of second series of this class I've been taking, with Andrew McLuhan, who's Marshall McLuhan's grandson.
Oh.
And Marshall McLuhan being the kind of amazing media, you know, theorist thinker from the 60s and 70s. His grandson Andrew does a class on McLuhan's Understanding Media book.
Wow.
from 64, which is like this basically crystal ball in terms of what technology in the future is going to be doing.
Yeah.
You know? But what's interesting is, like, he writes a lot about the sensory experience and how, you know, what screens do to us, what, you know, essentially how, as soon as you involve a new technology, you take things in differently because the ratio in which your senses operate, like, if, you know, hearing is, if you limit a visual sense, your hearing goes up. You kind of know these things. Like, if you blindfold yourself, you tune in with your ears a little bit more, you know, these kinds of things. So he writes about how technologies do those things and change the way we experience the world. And so we become different people with different technologies. 4-track recording is this kind of limitation. But anyway, this is all just to say, I wanted to play with mediums, right? Like, medium is the message, is McLuhan's famous sort of phrase. But we had the video of the live performance from the Sanctuary, one of the later shows on the tour. And we edited that, the performance of Let Me Go, Joe, which I had a good take of that night, and we turned it into black and white, you know, and we projected that onto a screen. Then we filmed me performing along with it and recording. We put that performance onto 1-track on my 4-track cassette, and then I sat with headphones and played to it again and added 12-string and some backup vocals, and we filmed that, and then we put that on another screen. Right. So the two screens from the shot, and the wild thing was the projector that we had, because you can't do it from two different projectors because they would be out of time with each other, because to get two things to start at the same time. So lock them in a video edit, and Mike split them in one projector. So the beam went out to two different screens, and we had to mask off the center of the beam so light wasn't casting between the projectors. It was quite technical.
I believe it.
And have the two performances playing in sync. So you hear, and they're both on the tape, right? And then I hit record and played along with it, and then moved during the performance to the red chair about halfway through, change instruments. And so we ended up kind of simulating what it's like to sort of do a 4-track recording where I'm playing along with two older captures, and then did two live tracks in the moment, and then
Yeah.
we mixed that, and Mike captured it all in one single walk through the studio.
Yeah, it's really beautiful.
Yeah, it was great fun, great fun. So when we got that, I was like, this is awesome. And then everything else, all the work came after that. I was like, I got the ending,
So, how do we get
how
there?
do we get there?
You got it now.
Yeah, he got there all right. What do you say we hear that live version of Let Me Go, Joe, from Character Witness? And keep an ear out for the squeak of the red swivel chair when Joel sits later in the song.
Wide-eyed, look in the sky high, wondering why I can't fly by. This place in the sun, tracing the blue, chasing the one. Up all below, let me go, Joe. Let me go, Joe, for a spell to find my way to heaven or wind my way through hell. Let me go, Joe. Let me go make my mistakes, the pedal to the metal. It's all part of the show. It's the cinema, you know. So let me go, Joe. Let me go for a spell to find my way to heaven. Why am I the way through hell? Let me go, Joe. Let curiosity kill this cat or fill his empty cup. Stepping out on a daydream, ain't got a doubt. Grand scheme, east to the west, 'cause the restless don't settle for rest. Now we sleep on the road, so let me go. Let me go to find my way to heaven. My way
Let
below,
go,
Joe. If I'm still here, pretend I'm gone to find the silver lining, the horizon's rolling on, Joe. Before I forget how, I'll go nowhere for the encore.
From Character Witness, the filmic companion piece to Joel's album, One Real Reveal, that's Let Me Go, Joe. Now, back to my chat with Joel Plaskett.
The interesting thing, like for me, what I realized over the course of making Character Witness, as I was trying to go, what is this about, other than my record and my tour? Because I'm talking about those things kind of as asides, but as part of what I do. But the idea of memory, right, is featured in it, and there's a kind of recollection aspect to the video, certainly with and the storytelling that I did on the tour, where I'm flipping through old photos, the power of an image to trigger your memory, but also how your memories change. But also when you're recording, you know, that first track that you record on and then you overdub on is like a memory now, right? It's a capture.
Yeah.
Then you add to it, and maybe it even gets blurrier or changes. And so, you know, like the interesting thing about recording things in general, whether it's a photograph, a video, or a four-track cassette recording, is there's this like capture that happens. And then your relationship to it changes because it's
Mm-hmm.
now in the past, it's not the present. I'm sort of stating the obvious, but there is, when you start to really dive into that and you think about it in relation to the way you remember things and you leave certain things out or certain things weren't captured. One of the great things about analog recording is its sort of limitations and the haze that it puts on things. And so much of making a record is what you don't capture.
What do you mean by that?
You know, every microphone has a limitation, every medium, whether it's tape or digital, has a limitation. The
Okay.
microphone we were using had a polarity switch. So, or not a polarity, but a car, you can make it in cardioid, so it's just capturing what's in front of it, or you can make it in figure eight, so it captures what's in behind, or you can make it in full omni, which means it captures the sound of the whole room. One of those things changes the relationship to what you're listening to. So all of those like little things that are kind of technical also lend themselves to what people get from it at the end and what kind of memory you're giving them, right? Like, where am I? Am I right in front of the singer, or am I in a room with a singer and I hear the rest of the room? You know, and that's what a photograph is too, right? How you frame it, all those
Yeah,
kinds of
sure.
things. And when you tell a story, you're doing the same thing, right? You're leaving out, you know, like 99% of what your experience was in favor of going, he had a dark mustache and was wearing sunglasses, you know, or whatever, you know, like, you know, you're honing in on the important details. You're not sort of saying like, I noticed some dandelions on the sidewalk unless they were important, you know? And so like, there's something really cool about that. I mean, and I know again, it all sort of sounds like you're stating the obvious, but you just start to realize like there's all these technical things go into creating something. And then what you end up with is this version of memory that can make for a really good, it, you know, it is where you create the impact, like what you left out of the photograph. What That's why I love analog technology in general, and why part of the video is talking about what I love about the analog, because analog technology actually tends to, when there's less information in it. Digital, you know, you can capture more digitally and draw the information out by brightening it up and this and that. But then you have so many things competing with your experience that you don't have that same sense of like focus.
Sure.
Analog technology is just this kind of like little window, and everything else is blurry.
Same thing with listening to this, this interview. Folks who I won't use the video. That it would be fine. It would be a totally different experience for
Yeah,
me,
it'd be a different experience. Exactly.
watching this interview back again. I'd rather just listen to things,
Exactly.
in
Exactly. And
this
I think we are
podcast.
kind of like, and the times we're living in with extreme amounts of information coming at us, both visually, podcast form, all of it, you know, like, you know, just people talking at each other. So many people are just watching conversations online, myself included. You know, my son watching, like, you know, the kids watching other people play video games and talk to it.
Yeah,
It's like the
totally.
weirdest
Making lots of money
phenomenon.
doing that too, those kids
Making lots of money
playing
doing
video
it,
games.
you know? And you're like, what is going on? What is this fascination with watching? But, you know, it's partly because you're watching another human beings doing things that you're, you know, so like, I look at that and I kind of chuckle and go, what's he watching other people play video games for? And then I go online and watch two people have a conversation about like politics or whatever, and probably from somebody else at like some higher level of consciousness. What are these guys doing? You know, like, why aren't they just telepathing this to themselves? You know what I mean? Like, why do they even have to talk about this? Don't they just intuitively know it? You know, the trees are looking at us going, what are these, like,
So much noise.
what are these rats doing down there on the ground?
Totally.
But, you know, this is all just to say, like, there is a lot afoot, and I think I'm personally interested in ways in which you can communicate to people, but also reduce some of the noise. And how do you pull people in? How do you pull someone into a 22-minute piece? You know, unfortunately, if you go looking at the data of anything you put online, you basically see the majority of the views
Like
are
for
like
60 seconds.
within the first 45 seconds or
Totally.
whatever. And then, you know, and then there's the handful of stragglers who hang around and watch the rest of it, you know? And so that's another reason not to look at data, you know, and having access to data changes the way you do things, right? You go, the problem, the reason we have a TikTok culture is because a bunch of people, or an element of TikTok culture where short form and our attention spans are like blasted into the next room is because somebody looked at the data and went, why would I make anything a minute when everybody wants things to be 35 seconds? And then it becomes, why would I make anything 35 seconds when only anybody wants 15? And it just sort of slowly, like everyone's like adjusting their art or their presentation, not even art, but just their presentation according to what they think the data tells them, which to me is just a train wreck for freeform creativity.
Right. And well, look, Character Witness was 22 minutes
22
because,
minutes. It had to be for CBC,
yes.
right? Like
I mean, it's the
I
same
could have
thing.
made it. It might have been easier to make it 5 minutes or an hour. I don't know. But that's based on some other version. But basically, that's based on it needs to be 22 minutes so they can fit in 8 minutes of ads, right?
Yes, of course.
It's a corporate. It's a corporate limitation. And I'm not against limitations. I'm
Sure.
not against, kind of working to form. It's kind of really great things about that. More just the kind of the decision making based on data, I think is a real, it can be very perilous for society. And I think it can, it's leading to some strange politics. It's leading to some like flat art, and all sorts of things, because you can kind of sense that things are just entirely playing to form and they're not pushed around as much or something. I don't really know. Or you can just kind of hear somebody in the background going like, tapping you on the shoulder going, you're not going to sell any records this way. Or, how are you, what, I don't know. I mean, I might be overthinking it, but yeah, my feeling is that, the sort of the data piece of this is something that's sitting there in the background. It changes your relationship to the world when you think of everything mechanistically. Businesses close, cut their losses, because it's not profitable enough. And we were working in a time where money is, king and all of it. And so, but you just sort of feel like, I love it when you go into an old bookstore or record store, like there's no algorithm behind this other than like one guy's, one person's like, peculiar tastes in crime novels or whatever,
Let's talk about yours. I mean, you are that peculiar guy at 45 Portland Street here in Dartmouth, Nova Scotia. You got the record store, the bookstore, the
Yeah, I don't have the record store. Taz has the
Taz is
record
the
store.
record store. But your building
Taz has the
houses the your Fang recording studio, Morley's Coffee, Friction
houses some
Books.
weirdness.
It
Sure.
houses some cool weirdness, man. That I mean, to what extent did you look into the data? When you were coming up with your
Yeah.
business plan at 45 Portland.
Not only enough to make sure I wasn't going fully underwater, but
Right.
I'm not, I'm, you know, and I but I have some smart people in my corner, my manager Sherry, but I tend to lead with what I want to do creatively and then figure out if I can afford to do it
I
later.
see.
And often it's Sherry's like, cool, you want to make a quadruple record? How do you want to pay for that, or how do you want to sell it? And then she comes up with, helps come up with creative ideas in which we pitch it, because I feel like there is a you have to kind of marry the commercial piece to it at some point, unless you're independently wealthy, which I'm not.
Sure.
And so I'm all for kind of a degree of collaboration, and certainly 45 Portland is like very much a group effort, right? I mean, I don't want to. I'm very happy that there's a building there that I was able to kind of like, shepherd into some form of space that could house these things.
Man,
And
it's the hub of a community for sure. Let's talk about the album a little bit because from 45 Portland, the building it leads us right to the 45 Portland Street band. I think they call themselves Eric Stephen Martin, Alexander Glant, Sarah Swire, and Aquaculture, and they on Songs from the Gang. Take on your incredible anthem from Ashtray Rock 2007's Ashtray Rock Drunk Teenagers. What was it like? What was it like hearing that from them, from the gang of people that I know from that building?
Love it, love it. Yeah, I mean, when I saw that and I listened to the record before I really read the liner notes that closely. So I didn't know I didn't know Lance Aquaculture was on it because we were listening to the digital files and I didn't have the record in front of me while I was sitting. And so I heard Eric's voice, go, oh, it's Eric. And then I was like, okay, I'm thinking, oh, it's 45 Portland Street Band. It must be Brandon on drums. And then I heard Alex come in. Oh, Alex is singing the second verse. And then when Lance comes in on the kind of across the bridge, Sarah comes in, right? Which is awesome. And I recognize that. But then when Lance goes, what's up, Joel? He says my name. I just lost it because it's like being direct. You know, all of a sudden, like there's somebody talking to me on the record, which is really cool. You know, it's not just a cover of the tune. It's like Lance going, "What's up, Joel?" Like, here I am. You know, and it was just like, oh my god, I just lit up.
From Songs from the Gang, a celebration of Joel Plaskett. This is the 45 Portland Street Band with Drunk Teenagers. More of my chat with Joel after this.
Halfway to Street Rock, spray paint.
I just wanna get real gone. I know we can find some liquor at the Bears Road Shopping Mall.
Bears Road Shopping Mall.
Dave Bart says he knows a dude. Call him Johnny, hook me up. I know he can hook us up. Drunk teenagers, let's start a fight. I'm getting hammered on a Saturday night. Drunk teenagers, you can pick your part.
And imagining teenage hangs in criminal establishments, memories and late night crashes. We drink to better days. Let's clink our glasses.
Imagine if that lake was beer. Imagine if that rock was hash.
Just wanna make some noise. The city or the country, we just wanna make some noise.
That's Eric Stephen Martin, Alexander Gallant, Sarah Swire, and Aquaculture doing Joel Plaskett's Drunk Teenagers. Now for the conclusion of my chat with Joel.
I'm still riding high from it. You know, I don't quite, I owe Sherry a huge debt for just, I can't believe that I think she basically got the idea for this a year ago. In fact, she told me that 10 years ago on my 40th birthday, she'd warned me about this, like, or something.
Oh, wow.
I don't remember it, you know, but she was like, I've been, you know, I've had this in my mind for 10 years, you know, like, wow. You know, when I think 40, she said, you know, when you turn 50, there needs to be a tribute record or something. And I have no memory of that, you know? But I don't know. But anyway, she went to town. So, you know, gotta take her to Italy or something. But, you know, really, just really floored.
You've talked about how time travel is what music is about, and the conflict you feel about wanting to be present, but while also living in the memory, while songwriting.
Yeah. I think a lot of writers can do, you know, and I think in general, you know, we can all get lost in our head. I don't like claim to successfully navigating it. I mean, I think sometimes I'm doing things that are at the expense of other things. There's always a trade-off, right? And one of the things about the modern world is like to pretend there's no trade-off. You know, I feel like part of what culture's trying to do, you know, what things are not culture, but what the sort of modern tech, you know, techno-optimist view is like, you can do it all. Look, your phone, it has everything in it. It's like, yeah, but if I use that app, I'm not using that one, you know, or this one, you know, the one in my head, you know, like I can use this application here, but I'm not applying myself elsewhere in the real world. So, you know, that trade-off is like painfully apparent. But we don't, we, but for some reason, we kind of don't, we don't recognize it. So, all the time, particularly because we get kind of pulled along by the next new thing, you know? And so, yeah, I think artists maybe are one of the great McLuhan quotes or things that he talks about is sort of how art can be kind of like an antenna. And you know, I feel like sometimes an artist is a little more sensitive. I don't know, maybe this is, it could be more sensitive to the environment and sort of see things on the horizon a little bit because you're tuning into that tension a little bit and trying to articulate it. And then other people feel it and go, that's why I resonate with it, because they can see that there's some sort of tension on the horizon. Or in your life, or in the general sense of what it means to be in the world that we're living in, a great painting can do that. It can, like, you know, whoa, what are they getting at here? Makes you think. So I'm always aspiring, like, that's what I'd like to do with your art, as well as entertain people.
Well, look, man, I really appreciate you taking the time today to
Oh
chat.
man, it's fun.
Seeing as we were reminiscing and we were talking about the past, all these songs on this album, songs from the gang or from the past. But let's go back to the one I think that is the earliest on the album, to off of Down at the Khyber from 2001. It's the song that ends the album, and that ends Down at the Khyber, doesn't end Songs from the Gang. But it's one of my favorite of your songs, and two of my favorite people took it on. Matt and Jill Barber did a cover of Light of the Moon.
I just love their version of it. It's beautiful, the harmony singing on it that they brought to it. It's so great. So great. Yeah, I was floored.
Can you tell me about what you remember of that song, your song, writing that song?
I got a 69 Pontiac, was my first car. I bought it on the West Coast. Mother and father-in-law live out here, right? And so my father-in-law, Alton, this is before he was my father-in-law, before Becky and I got married, but he was like, I found you a real cream puff. I wanted a West Coast car. And he said, a 69 Pontiac. And I mean, it was this big boat, you know. And anyway, I bought it off this older fella named Hugh, who lived in kind of an apartment building out here on the West Coast. Drove it across the country in about 6 days straight, because you know, it's the same as sleeping in the front seat, because it was the same as the back seat, just a bench seat with an AM radio. But on those old cars, because they had run that there was no running lights that always stayed on, right? You could turn the headlights off completely. I remember hitting the prairies with the moon, big full moon up, and no one on the highway, because it's late. I was doing long days, and I'd left the Rockies just behind me, and the sun was going down back there, and the moon was out, and I flicked the headlights off, and I was just driving by the light of the moon on the highway in, you know, in kind of Alberta, Saskatchewan, where the prairies started to roll. And I was just like, I could see clear as day, you know, because the moon was so bright. I only did it for a minute. No one was on the highway, but it was just sort of an extraordinary kind of memory. I just, it was, it, you know, it's like a mini kind of a spiritual experience in terms of the kind of the highway at night with the moon just lighting up the prairie. Just gorgeous. So that the song comes from that trip.
That's really beautiful.
Yeah, man.
We'll talk again, Joel.
Cool, man. Talk to you soon, Andrew.
Happy birthday, Joel. And well, that's me in the rear view. Let's end the show with Matt and Jill Barber doing Joel Plaskett's Light of the Moon.
In late September, I drove across the prairies, the mountains behind me, and the ocean beyond. This country's a coal mine, and I'm a canary. Turn out the headlights and the radio on. I remember the words, but I forget the tune. Stagger and swoop.
you wait for me. Don't come too soon. Through the night's deep abyss, flirt with the waitress in Sault Ste. Marie. Hear music and voices through static and hiss. I remember the words, I forget the tune. The light of the moon, the light of the moon. Under the stars, you stagger and swoon. The light of the moon, the light.
From the Gang, a celebration of Joel Plaskett. That is Matt and Jill Barber doing Light of the Moon. And that brings us to the end of this week's episode of When We Wake. Thanks again to my wake-up call guest, the birthday boy, Joel Plaskett. When We Wake is written, edited, hosted, and produced by me, Andrew Shaver, originally for broadcast on CKVE-FM on the glorious south shore of Nova Scotia, and now syndicated on stations clear across the country. If you'd like to get in touch with me between now and next week's show, send me an email, whenwewakeradio@gmail.com, or find me on Instagram, @whenwewakeradio or @theandrewshaver. Our theme song is Got You by my friend and yours, Noah Reed, and you'll have me again in a week. Thanks for listening.